Funding for THINK comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What sort of courage would it take to make a major life change? And what sort of effect might that transition have on your most important relationships? When ad executive Josh Kilmer Purcell and his partner Brent Ridge headed from Manhattan to far upstate New York in the fall of 2006, they were looking for nothing more than a few baskets of fresh-picked apples and a relaxing weekend away from the city. But when they stumbled upon a spectacularly restored but vacant 1802 house and farm for sale, the property cast a spell on them both. They bought the place as a weekend escape, but soon found the farm required more of their time, money, and energy than they could ever have imagined. Josh Kilmer Purcell is a writer and farmer who stars in the Planet Green reality series The Fabulous Beekman Boys. His new memoir is called The Bucolic Plague: How Two Manhattanites Became Gentlemen Farmers. Josh, welcome to THINK.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So it sounds like you and Brent already lived a charmed life. You had this great job in advertising, two books in print. He was a doctor and he worked for Martha Stewart. Did you realize before you bought the farm that there was something missing in your lives?
Well, I think we were getting to that point. You know, we'd both lived in New York. I'd been here almost 20 years. And growing up in rural areas, which we both did, we really wanted to get our hands back into the soil. Yeah, we actually had a full garden on the roof of our apartment building, but eventually that wasn't enough.
So you had made big transitions in the past. Before you got into advertising and writing, for a time at least, you earned your living as a drag queen.
Yeah, yes. The good old days, as they say. I've always kind of just, when an opportunity comes up, I'm the person that just takes it for good or for bad and just want to see what happens.
So are you the more risk-taking member of the relationship?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I don't think that Brent ever would have agreed to purchase the farm if it wasn't actually just such a beautiful property and such a historic importance. And it had been sitting empty for almost 4 years, so
yeah.
We felt like somebody had to come along and take care of it.
And when you guys first saw it, you thought it was a museum because it looked so beautiful.
It was absolutely gorgeous. We were so fortunate. A Manhattan couple had restored it before us because the husband of that couple grew up in the area and wanted to save this really important historic house. So they had put a lot of work into it.
So tell us what's on the property. Among other things, it comes with its own crypt.
Yes, that's one of the biggest draws, I think. It has its own crypt. It had a cemetery at one time, and it was all overgrown when they restored it. So they had moved all the gravestones into the crypt itself, but the crypt seats 9, should we ever need it.
Hopefully not for a very long time.
Yeah.
One mild surprise in this adventure, or maybe it's not a surprise. I mean, people, I think, make assumptions who live in big cities that rural areas are very intolerant of gay couples. What did you find in Sharon Springs?
Oh, the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
There had been a couple of gay couples that had moved up there before and started some successful businesses, so you know, we certainly weren't pioneers, and there are a lot of local gay people. I may get in trouble for this, but I've always felt that homophobia is sort of a luxury of the upper middle class, and people with too much time and too much money, you know, that wind up spending their time trying to figure out who's different from them.
Yeah, can you talk about your first night at the American Hotel?
Oh yes, it's a great old hotel in the middle of the town, restored by one of the pioneering gay couples, and we drove into town. We were up there, as you said, picking apples, and we always rented a car, and we would just drive until we got lost,
mm-hmm.
and we were lost. And as we drove into Sharon Springs, we were just dumbfounded. It's a ghost town. It was a spa town around the turn of the century for many years, and it swelled to 90,000 visitors every summer, and now the population had dwindled down to 500. So there were all these big, old, wooden, beautiful hotels and bathhouses that were sitting empty. And it really felt like a ghost town until we turned the corner and we saw this American Hotel and all the lights were on and people were coming. You know, you could see the people in the dining room, and we just immediately fell in love with the town.
Hmm. So your subtitle refers to the fact that you were Manhattanites, but as you mentioned, you both grew up in rural areas. How much real experience had you had with farm work?
Not much. Certainly not much with animals. Mm-hmm. We both grew up in families where we had grown our own food. We had large gardens, and that's what we were looking forward to most. And the goats were just an accident, as most everything in my life has been. But after we moved up, we got a letter in our mailbox less than a month after we moved up, and it was from a man named Farmer John. And he had, like many small farmers, he had a rough time, and he was losing his farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent us a very heartfelt letter talking about his 80 goats and how much he loved them and how he was going to have to send them to auction if he couldn't find a new home. So our barn was empty, and, you know, it's very hard to say no to homeless goats. And so we invited them to move in, and that's how we became overnight goat farmers.
You say we, but in fact, Brent said absolutely not, and you said sure.
Yeah, well, we were supposed to sleep on it for a while, and then I was up there for a few weeks trying to get the place set up,
mm-hmm.
and Brent was in the city working, and I just kind of gave in and invited the goats over.
Now, we'll talk in a few minutes about the challenges of goats, but they sound like really cute and sort of fun to have around.
Oh, they're wonderful. I mean, they're just as smart as dogs, and looking into their eyes, I swear to God, they're just desperately trying to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very smart animals.
So I mentioned at the top that Brent was working at the time as a sort of consultant on medical issues for the Martha Stewart Empire. And she had invited him to come into the studio and talk about making soap with goat's milk. Is that right?
Yes. Well, after we moved in, we had a lovely year or so, and then 2008 happened, and we both lost our jobs in the Great Recession.
Yeah.
Within a month of each other.
Which is terrifying when you have this like million-dollar mortgage on a second home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess we were part of the problem. We looked around and we said, what do we have? You know, what are our assets and what can we do with them? And while a lot of people might look at 80 goats as not an asset, we came up with the idea of making soap and goat milk soap. And so Brent apprenticed, learned how to do that, gave some to Martha for Christmas. She really enjoyed it and invited us on the show to make soap on the show. And that's how we launched our business.
So he's down there in the city and says, drive some kids here because we're going to have them in the studio. And that sounded like a good idea at the time.
Yes, driving five baby goats in the backseat of our truck down to the city at 4 in the morning. It seemed like it wouldn't be so hard. But what I didn't realize was, well, I mean, I guess I knew that goats would have to go to the bathroom eventually. I just didn't expect how much they went to the bathroom.
You'd been warned not to overfeed them.
Yes. And but you know, when you're bottle feeding baby goats, it's, you know,
they're
so
cute.
You don't want to stop.
Yeah. And I love you write that you stop at this truck stop and there are truckers who are like, oh, they're so sweet. Can I touch them? Can I feed them?
Oh, completely. I mean, when you drive around with baby goats, they, you know, they take all the attention. But yeah, truckers and people on, you know, on the road on business trips, they all stopped and helped me feed the goats. Overfeed the goats, I should say.
So you're approaching the city. I don't know if you go through the tunnel or what, and then you realize that you've got a problem.
Oh, it was awful. The smell just was tremendous. So, you know, I had overfed the goats, and they wound up having diarrhea, all five of the baby goats, pristine white baby goats. And since they were in a cage, they weren't pristine for long.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember being a little away from the George Washington Bridge and having to roll the window down and drive with my head out the window the rest of the way.
And you get there and you have to clean them up and you, I don't know, find a Dwayne Reed or something and go get baby wipes?
Yes. And I mean, people probably can guess, but Martha is a fairly particular person. and she doesn't like fragrances. And once I arrived at the studio and with these messy goats, Brent said, go get baby wipes down at the corner deli. And I was running down the street, and he yelled that after me, and he said, no fragrances.
Because Martha didn't want like the scented baby wipes.
Exactly.
But the appearance went well, and then all of a sudden you guys had more customers than you knew what to do with.
Yeah. I mean, what a fantastic opportunity to launch a business on Martha's show. And, you know, an opportunity just in the nick of time. You know, that was in the spring, and we had actually shut down the Beekman that winter because we weren't able to pay for the heating of it. And so we launched that. We had tens of thousands of visitors to our website that first day. And it seemed, I think people really reacted to what we were going through. You know, here we were, both out of work. We had done something a lot of people wanted to do. They wanted to give up their careers and start over again. And we started forming this community, this online community of people that were like us and wanted to live a little more simply, a little more naturally, but without necessarily becoming, you know, hippies off the grid.
Josh Kilmer Purcell is my guest. He's a writer and farmer whose book, now out in trade paperback, is called The Bucolic Plague, How Two Manhattanites Became Gentlemen Farmers. He is also a star of the Planet Green reality series, along with Brent Ridge of the fabulous Beekman Boys. We'll resume our conversation with Josh in a minute, and if you'd like to call in, you can get to us by the phone at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Hello again, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a great topic and guest for the last Think Show of the week, the last Think Show of the spring membership campaign.
I want to
thank
on wood there.
Knock on wood. I want to thank Josh, who's hanging in there for being patient during this membership campaign breaks. But you know what? We might just have a couple of these left because I know that it's been ticking down faster and faster. The last update we got was $29,574, and I think we've actually gotten a lot below that. I saw some cheering going on in the other room. Regarding yet another Friends membership at the $1,500 level. And, Chris, we have an updated total now.
$27,141. I now feel like I'm on the old, like, the Jerry Lewis telethons when the tote board rolls, but we just have somebody with a Sharpie in the other room on our little monitor. But that is great. Thank you all so much. We really appreciate your contribution. And, you know, getting down to a number like that, we're hoping to get under 20,000 by the end of this hour. Getting down to a number like that is a combination of big Friends level and above gifts and of modest gifts at, you know, $50 or $100 or $200. All of you who make contributions are part of the formula that makes this station work.
If you want to read these hilarious stories of Josh Kilmer Purcell's yourself, we can thank you today with your very own copy of The Bucolic Plague, the book that we're talking about
today.
When you join the station at the $120 membership level, if you know somebody who has chickens in their backyard or has been thinking about getting a goat.
I'm surprised you haven't already taken the book away from me.
No.
You want a goat now?
My wife wants a goat.
And she wants
a goat. Maybe we need to read this because, or she needs to read this so that we can, so she can really
stock up on baby wipes. And
unscented baby wipes.
Chris Boyd does not like fragrance.
We'd love to thank you with a copy of the book. Just call 888-694-6931 or go to kera.org and make your contribution. You know, really being $27,000 and change away from the end of the drive, Chris, means that we've raised almost $600,000. Our goal of $625,000, we're getting very close to the successful conclusion of this campaign. We're really excited and we're thrilled that you are participating.
Thank you very much to Christopher McAdams and Elizabeth Lundy, who I believe is the Elizabeth Lundy who's been on the show in Fort Worth. Greatly appreciate
Thank
that.
You, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Forrest Barber in Fort Worth. Thank you, Linda and Stan Barton in Dallas. We know there are others of you who are online right now or on the phone. We will do our very best to read everybody's name who makes a contribution during this hour. We are trying to wrap up the fall membership campaign for Think. Our personal goal that Jeff and I have sort of set for ourselves is to get under $20,000 by the end of this hour. With your contribution, either large or small, we'll get that much closer. So please support the station now with your dollars at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. Remember, if you make a contribution at or above the $120 level today, we would love to thank you with a copy of The Bucolic Plague, Josh Kilmer Purcell's new memoir. It's a lot of fun, and you will learn some interesting things, laugh, and there's also some really, you know, candid, poignant stuff in there. So we'll be back in a minute to our conversation with Josh. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Summer Youth Programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer and farmer Josh Kilmer Purcell. His new book is called The Bucolic Plague, How Two Manhattanites Became Gentlemen Farmers. It's out now in trade paperback. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Josh, you and Brent obviously shared this idea of living on the farm and having this simpler life. I'm curious, though, having now done it and done the city thing as well, is it really any simpler to live on a farm than it is to live in the city, or are there just a different set of complications?
Well, I still have both sets of complications. Mm-hmm. Since I still go back and forth from the city to the farm. I don't think any life is simple, or I believe life is as simple as you make it or don't make it. And that's one of the things that I think we learned about ourselves was that we both are very active people. And once we started this business and started working with other people in the village, and then the TV show started, life just got even more complicated.
Yeah, talk about the difference between, so you've written very candidly about your personal life, not just in this book, but in the past, I'm Not Myself Today, These Days, forgive me, is your first memoir. There's that kind of sharing what you choose to share about your life, even if you're very open about it, and then there's allowing a TV crew to come in and capture and edit and inflame in some cases. And was it a hard decision to make? Was it easier because you do write memoirs?
I do think it was a little easier. I mean, I certainly couldn't shame myself anymore. Yeah, I tried. But yeah, there was a moment when we really had to think about it. The way the show came about was when we started the business, we started sending out an email newsletter, and the president of Planet Green signed up for the newsletter. Mm-hmm. And she called us and said, I want to do a show. And that's when we were thought of all the reality shows that we'd seen, and we were a little wary, but after meeting with Planet Green and meeting with the production company, we really felt, you know, A, of course this would be a good opportunity for our business, but B, they seemed to have the same philosophy of life that we had, and it could really help our struggling small town, put our village on the map.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Margie in Dallas. Hey, Margie.
Yes, hi. Chris, I love your show.
Thank you.
And Josh, I'm an urban farmer, so I can somewhat relate to you here in Dallas.
Oh,
great. We have chickens and compost and vegetable garden and harvest rainwater from our roof and more. And, I loved your book, too.
Oh, thank you.
It was really great. My question for you is, when is the Harvest Festival?
Oh, gosh. The town hasn't agreed on a date yet, but and Marge is asking about our Harvest Festival, which was featured on the television show, which is an amazing festival that we have in the village of Sharon Springs every year. We will announce the date on our newsletter, which if people want to go to beekman1802.com, they can sign up for. And then it's always tricky to get the entire town to settle on one date, but it'll be in late September.
Has everybody in town been delighted by the extra attention and traffic and everything else that has come to Sharon Springs since, particularly the Planet Green show?
For the most part, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, many, many people have benefited. Their businesses have benefited. It just feels more alive in town. Of course, as any small town, there's a few people that like things just fine the way they were.
Yeah.
And but for the most part, it's been an amazing rebirth of the town. When we threw the first Harvest Festival before the television show, we had about 300 people, and we thought that was tremendous. It was the first festival in decades. And then after the television show aired last year, we had over 5,000 people come to town, and it just shut the town down. But it was a lovely, lovely day.
Do you have people, like, coming by to gawk at your house now?
Yep. and that's fine. We used to actually not mind when people came by. Then our insurance agent told us we should probably put a sign at the end of the driveway.
Yeah.
But we're also in the village. We have our store in the village, and Brent's there almost every day, working in the store. So we just love to meet people that like the show or read the books.
talk a little bit about starting the company because, I mean, obviously you both have, Brent's got an MBA and you've worked in advertising and I guess continue to do so. So you knew how to market things, but it's not necessarily, even with a great product and good marketing skills, to start up a company at like the depths of a recession is a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people weren't lining up to buy luxury goat
$8
milk
soap. Right.
Yeah. But what people did want to buy was they wanted to buy the story.
Mm-hmm.
And people liked the story of Sharon Springs, you know, the town that just refuses to die. And they appreciated what we were trying to do to bring awareness to small farms and to help ourselves out of this recession. So, I mean, yes, to a certain extent, we're both very good marketers by trade. But if we didn't have these stories and these people of Sharon Springs backing us up, I don't think anybody would be listening.
And because I'm a freaky researcher who feels like I have to know every detail, I looked up online what it takes to make soap the way you guys make soap with like potash, and you start from scratch. Is that right?
Yes, with the milk and soap is really just fat and lye, mm-hmm. and the combination of that creates soap. And it's very, very hard to find real soap. Even all the natural soaps you see generally are a glycerin-based product. But we make ours the old-fashioned way with goat milk, lye, and a couple of other oils.
Do you like love the smell of it? Or now, if you get too close to it, is it too much and you don't want to be around it?
Oh, it's fantastic. People can smell our store down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when Brent comes into the city because, he comes in and he smells all his clothes smell of the soap.
Hmm.
And it's interesting. It smells like soap. It's hard for people to imagine who haven't smelled it. But once you do, you're like, yep, that's real soap should smell like.
Yeah. There's a great, you're very candid here about the times when it was tense between the two of you. It's always hard when jobs are on the line and money is tight. And at one point, so Brent had lost his job. And so he was living full time on the farm and you're still going back and forth. And you felt like he was getting to live your dream. And that was stressful. Can you talk about that?
Well, I still struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
But ironically, that's an area where the television show has helped.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't get to see what our partner does all day. We each go off to work, and you just assume the other person is having a better day than you are. And, with the television show, I really get to see exactly how hard Brent is working, sun up to sundown, and see the stresses that he goes through. And conversely, he sees my day-to-day life and how much, he knows how much I would like to be on the farm. And he gets to see me not being on the farm, and maybe he lets me complain a little bit more.
How did you work in writing, and I know this book came out last year originally in hardcover, but how did you work in writing with everything else you had to get done?
Well, the book was done before the television show. I certainly couldn't have done them at the same time.
Yeah.
But the writing is always, I've always had a full-time career, and all of my books I've been writing during work. It actually gives me a great escape from my day-to-day job to write.
Mm-hmm. You write in the book that people are always curious to know what you know about Martha Stewart. And I thought it was funny that you said, no matter what, you would sort of make fun of Martha Stewart for the reasons that a lot of us do. And Brent does not like that even today.
No, I still have to be careful what I say. But I really believe that Martha enjoys, I know that she enjoys what we're doing, and she's read the book and she thinks the book is funny, and I still love running into her. We saw her at a party the other night, and I keep a mental list of questions for her when I see her, and the other night we saw her and she helped me figure out what was wrong with my hyacinths.
You have a funny story in there of when you first told her that in the past you had written a memoir. Can you tell us that?
Well, it was the first time I met her,
uh-huh.
And we were at her house in East Hampton. She was under house arrest still for her issue.
Yeah, she's got the ankle monitor and the whole nine.
Yes, the whole thing. But she was there making lunch for us, tuna patties, and I was very nervous, of course, being with Martha in her kitchen. And she asked me to chop up some celery, and I just froze because I couldn't figure out how big should I chop it. Should I chop it on an angle? Should I should I dice it? Is this the right knife? Is this the right cutting board? And I think anybody would feel that way in Martha's kitchen. But she was very lovely. And then she asked what I did for a living, and I told her I'd written a memoir. And she asked what it was about, so I had to tell her. You know, I was a drag queen who dated a crack addict and male escort.
And was she like, huh, what was her response?
Her response at the end, after I said that, she turned to me and she said, are you normal now? which is a very studied response.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate her for that because it wasn't a judgment call by any means. It was literally wanting to know how somebody who dated a crackhead male escort who was a drag queen was sitting across from her eating tuna wasabi patties.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about it, too, Josh, is that, you know, one can imagine that you would start on this project with the farm and think this would make a great memoir. I can't imagine that when the subject of your first memoir was happening in real life, you didn't embark upon that specifically thinking, oh, I'm going to write about this someday.
No, certainly not. My first book, I'm Not Myself These Days, which was about those years as a drag queen, I was really trying to close a chapter in my life. I looked back and I thought, boy, that was a strange thing to do,
yeah.
You know, to be a drag queen and live with a crack-addicted male escort. I thought, that's really not like a Midwestern boy. And as we all age, we start making fun of the things we did when we were young.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't want to trivialize it because I still had great emotions for that time.
Yeah.
So I sat down to explore what that meant to me.
My guest is writer and farmer Josh Kilmer Purcell. His book is called The Bucolic Plague, How Two Manhattanites Become Gentlemen Farmers. He also stars with his partner Brent Ridge on the Planet Green reality series The Fabulous Beekman Boys. We'll be back to our conversation with Josh in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join us, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. If you are ready to support KERA this afternoon at or above the $120 level, we can thank you with a copy of The Bucolic Plague, which is really a great piece of reading. The only downside is that you'll probably want to tear through it in a night or two, so it's not going to last you weeks because it's so good that you will have a hard time putting it down. You can get your copy by calling in to 1-888-694-6931 to make a contribution or go online to kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We do have the book at the $120 or above membership level. We've been hearing from folks today, Chris, at a higher level. We've been hearing from several folks at the Friends level, $1,500 a year. That's just $125 when you spread it out as a sustaining member of the station. But of course, your $120 or $150 or $360, maybe you can do $30 a month for the station that you listen to so much. Especially today, there's a challenge on the table. It's $5,000. It's at risk. We must end the spring membership campaign today in order to receive an additional $5,000 from Diane Wenger. She is a family law attorney in Tarrant County. She's also a friend of the station. She's been a supporter of the station since the 80s. She was on the air earlier today talking about it. She's been supporting the station since the 80s, and she wants the drive to end today. We know you want the drive to end today. We really don't want to miss the opportunity to accept this extra $5,000 either. So right now we have $27,000 and change left to raise. Your call to 888-694-6931 or your online contribution at kera.org will make it happen.
We know that many of you might wish that you could give $5,000 to end the membership campaign this spring. But even if that's not within your budget, your contribution in any amount will bring us that much closer. It really does add up. There's something very magical about the energy of what we hope is the last day when everybody thinks, okay, they're close now. Now I'll make my contribution. I'll be one of these people. We are down now to $26,794 left to raise. We have slowed down a little bit from the pace we were at in the last hour. So make sure that if you want to make a contribution, you take action now. It really is important to the station. We would love to be, you know, at or below $20,000 by the time All Things Considered starts this afternoon. And I think we can get that. You can make your contribution now by going online to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931.
We've wandered into that no man's land, Chris, where the guest is too interesting and the stories are too entertaining and people don't want to tear themselves away from the show to make the call to 888-694-6931 or to go online to KERA.org. Even though you can listen while you go online and make your contribution at KERA.org, well, for the next few minutes, till about right now, it's about 1:38 till about 1:43. We
won't 5 minutes without the fabulous Josh Kilmer Purcell.
Exactly, we won't be on the air with Josh until we come back from the station break here coming up shortly. So take this moment right now and support the station. If you listen, if you're listening to the podcast, or maybe you're listening to KERA right now on the free mobile app, well, just hit pause for a second. Go over to KERA.org, make your contribution, and then you can play. You can, with the KERA app, which is free, by the way, totally free, online at KERA.org, you can pause live radio. You can rewind it. Did he really say that? Yes, he really did say that. You can check it, and it's there for you absolutely free. So pause it, and then surf over to KERA.org and make your contribution. Please do it right now, because there's just $26,794 left to raise. When we do that, drive ends, and Diane Wenger, a friend of the station and a family law attorney in Tarrant County, will give KERA $5,000 additional dollars.
You know, the station has worked really hard to operate fully in what is today a multimedia environment, which is why we are no longer simply broadcast radio. We are also available to you via podcast with just about all the shows that we produce. We are also available in that KERA app, which is made available for free to you, but in fact has a cost to develop and implement. That is possible because of contributions in the past. The reason that you can enjoy it today is because someone made it possible to be there. Your contributions not only keep going the things that you have come to enjoy, that the services that KERA provides to you, but perhaps allows for additional services in the future. I can't say what those will be because I'm not the technical person around here, but I know that our folks are always thinking of better ways to be able to serve you. Most important, of course, is being able to consistently serve you, the programs that you count on KERA. So your support now will help to do that at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
You can't yet download our content directly into your brain. But once that's technologically possible, we'll probably offer it. And you know what? It'll probably be free because that's how we do
that's
it
here.
That's
how we roll.
We do everything for free. And then we hope that maybe someday you'll get on board. We'll get on board right now at KERA.org. Do your part. Help us whittle away the last just $26,794 left in the drive and bring this campaign to a successful conclusion.
Would it be unethical to embed like a generosity virus? I suppose it probably would. Anyway, we will allow you for now to voluntarily make your contribution. 1-888-694-6931 is the number, or online at KERA.org. Remember, $120 or more, you can choose a copy of Josh Kilmer Purcell's The Bucolic Plague, and we'll return to our conversation with him in just a couple of minutes.
Funding for THINK comes from SMU's summer youth programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer and farmer Josh Kilmer Purcell. His book is called The Bucolic Plague, How Two Manhattanites Became Gentleman Farmers. He's also a star of the Planet Green reality series, The Fabulous Beekman Boys. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Maybe I haven't mentioned this, but the name Beekman comes from the name of the mansion, because that's the name of the family that originally built and ran the farm. Is that right?
Exactly. William Beekman, first judge of the county.
Is there a lot of history about his life?
There's not as much as you would expect. There's varying accounts, but he had probably 10 children, and only one, maybe two of those had children of their own. Most of them died very young. So there wasn't a long line of people.
I know the house had been fully restored. Are there things, do you ever discover things that you thought that you don't really understand, or, a layer of wallpaper under another layer?
Mostly what we discover is the ghosts. So that's our...
Thank you. I was leading you there. Perfect.
Yes. There's noises. I mean, literally at least once a week we hear activity, generally in the kitchen when we're lying in bed at night.
Like somebody setting a table.
Yep, setting a table, banging on pots and pans. Not loud, but almost as if they're making something.
Yeah.
And most everybody that comes to visit winds up hearing it as well.
What do you think that is? Do you believe it's a ghost?
I honestly do. We never, you know, I wasn't one of those people that really believed in it before. But it's funny, when you think you hear a ghost for the first time, you think you're going to be scared and frightened. And and really, once we heard it and we realized that we couldn't find a source, we just sort of went to bed. What are you going to do? So.
And you at one point brought in like a medium, right?
We've had a couple of ghost hunters come in, yes. Mm-hmm. We had the local one come in who's a substitute teacher in the elementary school. And she identified several ghosts. And then we had one for the television show come in who identified several. But the main one we feel is one that we've called Mary, because there's the name Mary is carved in the floor of the hallway of our house. And she's a little girl, we've been told, and she believes that Brent and I are her imaginary friends.
Oh, because and the idea, I guess, that the ghost hunter told you was that sometimes spirits don't know that they're not the ones who are still alive.
Exactly, which is an intriguing thought.
Hmm. It's sort of sweet. If you have to have a ghost, a little girl is not so bad.
Not so bad.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Anne in Dallas. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I just love the show, The Fabulous Beekman Boys. I enjoy it so much. And it's so wonderful because as a reality TV show, I think you cover both humor and real sensitive issues. And two things I wanted to tell you. One, I wanted to know if you're going to ever show your house, if you're going to get time to redo the home and show the interior. And then after you ask that, I wanted to ask you one other thing.
Well, go ahead and ask it now, and just in case we get disconnected.
The other thing I just wanted to tell you was that I felt that the show where you were able to speak to Brent's grandmother was so touching and so wonderful, and I was in tears.
Oh, thank you. I was too. But to your first question, actually, if you go on to Beekman1802.com right now, actually, we've got a couple of video tours. So don't make fun of our decor, but but please tour the house. And the second question, she's referring to an episode where I talked to Brent's grandmother for the first time. We've been together for 11 years, and Brent was raised by a very fundamentalist family. And so I had never met his extended family.
So the idea, they were uncomfortable with the fact that he's gay?
Yes, yep. But we'd known that she had known we were a couple, and Brent finally sent her a copy of the book for her to read first and sort of get the background to our lives together. And then we called her.
And how did? Can you tell us what happened?
It was very sweet. It really felt like we were all waiting for each other to make the first move. Mm-hmm. And she invited me down for Christmas, and we went down, and I had a really great time with them. And I always say, you know, I'm actually religious, and you know, she believed in God, and I believed in God. So it took 10 years because we were letting him sort it out.
Yeah. A really nice way to look at it.
Yeah.
There again is a moment where I think it could go either way. On the one hand, it's wonderful to have this record of this amazing moment that turned out beautifully. On the other hand, there's that sense that this is your private life and you're sharing it with America. Did you, was that hard?
We did check with his grandmother to make sure it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It does bring up a lot. We're so used to seeing what we think is reality on television, and I think it might be skewing people's idea of what reality is. Our show is different than other shows. We film all year long. Most reality shows, they just film within 8 to 12 weeks, and they create their storyline and then shoot it.
And they throw a lot of stunts also, I understand, at the people who are involved.
Yeah, I mean, they really do script out those weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, we have a shared Google calendar that the producers and the network can see, and they literally just look at our calendar and they see if something interesting is coming up, and then they decide if they want to come film it.
So do the people who are with you and following you around on a relatively frequent basis, do they become friends, or is it a different sort of relationship?
Oh, gosh, they are family. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing that's different about our show. For two seasons now, we've had the same exact crew, which is very, very rare,
yeah.
And they have to travel from L.A., but they've been there for Thanksgivings and Christmas and birthdays. You know, they really have become a part of the family.
Speaking of which, it sounds like you guys throw really idyllic parties, but that this is not something that just comes off easily, that it can be a source of stress in the house?
Yes. I mean, my idea of a party is one where everybody's having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think the definition is. But Brent's idea of a party is more like Martha's, where it looks like everybody's having a good time. And the two don't always marry.
Yeah, you write in the book, I guess, the first 4th of July that you guys had a party, and he was really obsessed with making homemade ice cream.
Yes, and he just would not let that rest. But at the same time, he didn't realize what a chore the running a farm was and trying to get that ready, just the day-to-day chores of that. So,
is it stress to have to, you know, not quite like Martha Stewart, but you're taking photographs for the website and you know, your people admire your life. Do you feel pressure to have an admirable life that people want?
We used to, and then what we realized was we're not experts. We're not Rachel Ray. We're not Martha. We call this thing an experiment, and it's a shared experiment. And so we do post everything, our mistakes, the things that turn out well, the things that don't turn out so well. And what's so great is that we learn from people just as they might learn things from us. Hmm. And that's why it's just been tremendous, the people that have actually physically come to Sharon Springs to share with us, share what we're doing.
Do you still hope or expect that at some point you will be at Sharon Springs full time?
I do. And I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And we make that decision almost every day. And part of that, the business is growing, which is great, and we're supporting or partially supporting over 20 people in town now. And to be honest, because I work in Manhattan, my paycheck's from Manhattan, in order to make up that salary, Brent could hire 3 or 4 other people in
yeah.
the area. So that's what we do.
So it's a choice about really social responsibility as much as anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really admirable sacrifice to make.
Well, I don't see the sacrifice because it does, you know, the business is growing and it's my town too, so.
Yeah, you're just sort of laying out plans for the future.
Yep.
Are you always thinking about what you'll write about next? You've written a novel in the past as well. Do you sort of like to go back and forth?
I'm not sure of what I'm going to do, but I'm taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't want to be one of those memoirs that starts writing about going to the laundry. So I sort of have to wait for something big to happen.
Well, we'll be right there reading it when it comes along. Thank you so much, Josh Kilmer Purcell, for your time.
I hope everybody's going to pledge.
Thank you very much, and I hope everybody buys some soap.
Thank you.
Josh Kilmer Purcell's book is called The Bucolic Plague, How Two Manhattanites Became Gentlemen Farmers. If you would like to have a copy of this book, and it really is a really entertaining and interesting and poignant at some moments read. It is available as a thank you at the $120 contribution level. You can make your contribution online at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I heard we got some more contributions. We haven't gotten an updated total, but it looks like our Andy Ibarra, our director of membership, is down the hall on Pledge Control Central. The last we heard was $26,794, and now we've got $24,160 left to raise. So so many of you are coming through right now at kera.org or via 888-694-6931. That we're really getting close now. We started this morning. We started the Think Show at noon today, still needing $39,000. There's just $24,160 left to raise, and we want to make that happen today so the drive can end and so we can accept a $5,000 challenge grant from Diane Wenger, a family law attorney in Tarrant County, also a friend of KERA and a generous supporter of the station for, gosh, like 30 years or something. Diane was saying on the air this morning she's been a member since the 80s. So help Diane help us end the drive and help KERA stay fiscally sound.
I mean, you guys are with us day in and day out. And if you're listening this far into the drive, we know you've heard a lot of pledging as well. You know that, you know, we work it for every $35 and $50 and $60 and $120 contribution. So if your contribution in any amount can help us to accept $5,000 additional dollars, you know how we will make that money work for you here at this station. The money goes to pay for the programming that you count on. And this is a community-owned an operated radio station. The people who work here live and work in this community, and we're really proud of that. Your contribution to the station makes you part of the team that makes KERA possible. There's a reason that we mostly refer to you as members and not donors, because we really think that you're part of the KERA team when you make a contribution of financial support. Thank you so much to Miriam George in Arlington, Karen Coates in Dallas, Donna Derevich in Arlington, and Shannon and Douglas Brown in Boyd, my favorite city in Texas.
Boyd, Texas. And Larry, Joseph in Plano. Thanks also to Jeffrey and Amber Paulson in Frisco, Susan and Brad Baker in Euless, and Marie Eckelmeyer in Anna. Thank you so much to each of you. You know, Chris, we're hearing from all over North Texas.
It's
so great to hear from you. If you have yet to make your contribution, you can help us end this drive successfully. Don't just let this end slip by without getting involved. Don't think, oh, I dodged it again. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it through a membership campaign again without giving.
You might imagine that you'll feel relief, but actually you might feel a little icky.
Well, you know, the feeling that you get when you join the station
is great.
It's great. You know that you're doing your part, and you get to listen knowing that you helped make the programming possible. Just call 888-694-6931 or go to KERA.org. And don't forget, you can get your very own copy of our guest this past hour's book, Josh Kilmer Purcell, a perfect public radio book, because, Chris, it has not one but two subtitles.
Yes.
After the colon. You know, The Bucolic Plague is the main title, but then it's How Two Manhattanites Became Gentlemen Farmers, and then it says,
colon,
An Unconventional Memoir.
We rarely do books on the show that don't contain a colon. Like, it's really, you know, we don't do a lot of novels, and so it seems like nonfiction books, you have to have a colon.
Subtitle's great. It's good because,
yeah,
you know, it tells you what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's good. This is a good one. Yeah. It was a great conversation. We got a lot of calls from those of you who, on this part of the membership campaign. We're thrilled that you're still listening. We just hope that you're also contributing online at KERA.org or on the phone this hour.
1-888-694-6931 is that phone number. You can, of course, go online, and your membership counts just as much at KERA.org. You can choose a green membership if you'd like, which I really like because you don't get a lot of, we call them direct mail. You might call them junk mail. Of course, it's not junk when we send you communications, but we don't send extra paper along. It's a green membership basically means we communicate with you via email. And it saves us a little money, but the reality is we're most interested in it because we don't use paper that we don't need to use.
Well, and all the way around, I mean, those dollars that are spent then on stuff that you can listen to,
right,
rather than stuff that you may or may not read.
Recycle.
Yeah, exactly. So check that out online at KERA.org or call 888-694-6931. Just $26,000 and change left to raise in the drive, and we'll be able to gratefully end the membership campaign thanks to you when you make your contribution. We'll also be able to accept a generous $5,000 contribution from Diane Wanger, a family law attorney and a friend of KERA from Tarrant County.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number to get in on this opportunity to be part of the KERA team. You can also go online to KERA.org. I want to thank Kevin Richardson in Dallas, Robert and Claire Miller in Grand Prairie, and Barb and Brooks, looks like Brooks or maybe Books Holiday in Dallas. Thank you so much.
It's $24,160 left to raise. I was actually remembering a previous total, just $24,160 left to raise in the entire spring membership campaign. The great news is that means that we've raised almost $601,000 thanks to all of you who have called 888-694-6931. We're talking about less than 5% here, about, give or take, left to raise in this membership campaign. We can easily do this today. But we can only do this today. We can only be sure of successfully concluding the campaign today and being able to accept a $5,000 challenge grant when we do end the campaign today. Remember, we have to do it today in order to accept the $5,000 from Diane Wanger. So please do your part right now. Call 888-694-6931 or go to KERA.org and contribute right now. We just got a new update, Chris.
Let's see. It looks like, $23,000. We've broken the $24,000 barrier. $23,994. Please help us out. Continue to keep adding to that when you go online to KERA.org or call 1-888-694-6931. In addition to Josh Kilmer Purcell's book and Judy Dutton's book, Science Fair Season from the First Hour, we have all the books that we have talked about on Think throughout this membership campaign are still available if you would prefer to choose one of those. So check them out online or ask about them on the phone, and we would be delighted to hook you up.
888-694-6931. It's 90.1 KERA, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. Online at KERA.org, where you can make your contribution as well. Remember, $23,994 left to raise in the membership campaign. That's all, and then the drive will end immediately. So go ahead and make your contribution right now at 888-694-6931 or on the web at KERA.org.
You guys are really phenomenal. We so appreciate how much we can count on you and how generous you are. If you haven't had a chance to make your contribution yet, KERA.org or 888-694-6931. Thank you so much.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.